show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. You don't have to do a double take with your ears. You are hearing our sweet, soft voices yet again. It's been a couple weeks. Last week, unfortunately, some things got in the way. We weren't able to record, but lucky for you guys, you missed absolutely nothing in the world of baseball. If you've been following it all, you know it's been, at this point, eerily slow this offseason. But the man who is only eerie in his level of fantasticness is with me this evening is Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this unseasonably warm all of a sudden evening? At least it was here in Kansas City.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks have been just up and down weather-wise. It's annoying. A lot better this week. Last week I was insanely busy all week, so it was just like, you know, well, we had to take a day off because I was just fried at the end of every day until Friday, and then, good to be back after a week off. We didn't really mean to take a week off, but baseball's not doing anything, so.
Nope. If baseball can take the entire offseason to this point off, then we could take a week.
Right. I think it's fair.
So, one of the things that did happen in the greater realm of baseball that's not in regards to free agency, as these players we'll talk about are well past it, the announcement for the 2018 Hall of Fame class did come out today. I didn't see the whole list. There's only four players. I know the big one that everyone, there are two names. There's always a name of people that are, everyone's either glad they got in or whatever, but then there's also the people that, oh, this person should have gotten in but didn't. And in that case this year, Vladimir Guerrero is the name of the person who did get in, and Edgar Martinez is the name yet again of the player who didn't get in. Do you have the list offhand of the other? I don't have the other ones offhand.
The Chipper Jones made it first ballot, 97% of votes, which makes sense. I think that's like in the top 10 of all time percentage-wise. So easy call there. Jim Thome made it, who hit approximately 738 home runs against the Royals in his career.
Yes.
So – in fact, for a while, he was the only left-handed hitter to hit a home run off of Danny Duffy for almost like 2 years, maybe even longer than that, like 2 or 3 years. And then Duffy gave up a homer to Michael Conforto in game 4 of the World Series. And that was the only lefty who had hit one off him. And he gave up like 2 or 3 last year. So, you know, that feat is not as impressive
it's
now.
It's no longer special.
So he made it. Vlad Guerrero, as you said, who... You know, I think some people were surprised that he made it first ballot, and then also that he made it at, he was like 93%. So a lot of people were really on board with that. And then Trevor Hoffman made it with 79.9% of the vote, which is just about 5% higher than the threshold. He's probably the one that I would bicker the most about, but at 600 saves, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think he's a Hall of Famer?
If I were filling out a ballot, he would be the guy I would drop off figuring everybody else was going to get in so that I could vote for somebody else, you know, and not be worried if he didn't make it. So
okay.
I see why he's in. I get it. It's totally fine. But he's not like the slam dunk type of guy. I go with my gut quite a lot, and it's like I always have trouble pushing closers over there unless they're like Mariano Rivera. So that's my own bias, even though the numbers are probably right to do it. But yeah, Edgar Martinez was 20 votes short. He hit 70.4%. I think his last year on the ballot is next year, and he should get in. But, you know, 20 votes, you know, he's just short. So I think he'll probably get in. Mike Mussina gained some kind of momentum. I think he's like at 65% or something. He's got a good shot. And I think next year Mariano Rivera is the top name to join the list of potential inductees.
He'll be in the Chipper Jones category of
there's
a doubt. Yeah, why even hold the vote for a player like that?
Just let him go in there. Oh, I think Roy Halladay's in there, who passed away recently. That accident back in November. So
yeah, very tragic.
Mean, you know, that's
and he's I don't know. He's probably a borderline guy for me.
He didn't have the longevity, like, career-wise, but when he was actually pitching, it's like if there was anybody who was going to actually throw, like, a lot of complete games, he was the guy.
Yeah, it's weird because he had, like, his era of, like, complete dominance, you know, was short-lived. The rest of his career was still really good, mm-hmm. but that era of, like, total dominance was just kind of shorter than – I think a lot of some of the other, like, your Randy Johnsons of the world, that type of thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know. But that's a discussion for a different year. I'm intrigued by your Trevor Hoffman stance because, and I only say that because I think the, and I guess I don't know where you come out on Edgar Martinez. I don't know if we ever really talked about it too in depth, but I feel like the argument has to be the same for the two of them because mm-hmm. with a closer and a designated hitter, you know, the detraction is always going to be about stuff that they didn't do, but at the same time, there has to be something said for doing that one thing so spectacularly well that you're truly historic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's in my view. So,
I get that,
you know, and I don't, a lot of what you said about Trevor Hoffman, you know, like taking, if he's your last guy off the, the ballot, you know, because you think, oh, he's probably okay. And, you know, I'd like to get somebody else some votes. Yeah, I can kind of get behind that, but for me, I think they're both kind of in that same bracket of thought for me in terms of they just did what they did so well that has to count for something at a Hall of Fame level.
Yeah,
that's my.
I think that's fair. I just kind of go back to, like, for me, it's always like when I was watching someone, did I ever get the sense that they were, like, super elite? And maybe that's just a function of he pitched for the Padres for so long and I didn't see a lot of the Padres, but, like, saw a lot of Mariners games because Royals would play them quite often.
Right.
And
his era, they made the playoffs a lot. You know, they had Griffey, they had Randy Johnson, they had, you know, that whole team was, like, superstars at Steam. You know, they had Alex Rodriguez when he was young, Jay Buhner, you know, they had at kind of the tail end of it, they had Ichiro. So that era of Mariners baseball was pretty nuts.
Yeah. So I think maybe it's just an exposure thing. I'm not going to say that Trevor Hoffman doesn't deserve to be in. I like the point you make about, like, Martinez doesn't really play defense for most of his career because he was a DH for all but, like, the first two or three years. And Hoffman was a closer and a reliever for pretty much his whole career. So, but they excelled at it. You know, Hoffman is, you know, talked about Mariano Rivera. I mean, he's right behind him as far as closer stature. So it's in that kind of thing. I guess you could make the comparison of, like, Rivera and Hoffman are like David Ortiz and Edgar Martinez in that, you know, Ortiz is going to get in too, first ballot.
Right.
So, you know, if you're going to overlooked the fact that he really didn't play defense. He was a DH for his whole heyday with, you know, he spelled at first base, but
yeah. And when he played first base, it's not like he was good.
Right. He was just there because they needed to find a way to get him in the lineup.
And you can't give someone credit just for being there. If you're going to try and hold defense as they have to play defense to be in the Hall of Fame, you can't give them credit for just playing. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to say defense matters, then it has to matter to the point that they have to be good. That's my take on it anyway.
Yeah, I just think that there's probably going to be a lot of people who say, oh, we can't vote in Edgar because of this, and who are going to turn around and vote for Ortiz. And it's like, well, just put him, you know, just put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and you also have to wonder, too, does the David Ortiz, you know, being on the Red Sox, a little bit more prominent than the Mariners, plus the, mm-hmm. you know, breaking the curse, and then you had, you know, after the Boston Marathon bombing, you had David Ortiz and that, you know, rousing speech that he gave and everything, you know, like these types of moments that, you know, if you're a Hall of Fame purist in the sense of, you know, like what they did on the field, those types of things don't really matter, except to the extent that how much Ortiz was a part of why they won those championships and broke the curse. But as we all know, Hall of Fame voters don't look at things from that ultra purist angle, at least in terms of on the field only. They subconsciously or consciously, they take into account all of the all of this off the field stuff and what they've meant to the game and all these
extracurriculars.
Exactly, you know, and that, which is why someone like Barry Bonds still doesn't make it in the Hall of Fame.
And Roger Clemens and
yep.
And Andy Pettit and Gary Sheffield's running into that, and Curt Schilling has his issues off the field.
Palmeiro,
who didn't even make the 5% to stay on the ballot his first year of eligibility, he just was gone. So,
yep.
You know, so yeah, I mean,
and it used to be. I mean, he's a 500 home run guy. It used to be that 500 home runs, 3,000 hits. You know, those were locks. If you got that, you were in the Hall of Fame, but. No longer. So Mark McGwire, same deal.
Yeah, Sammy Sosa. I think he barely got enough to stay on the ballot this year, but he's not going to end up making it. He's just going to be someone who's on it. So, you know, I think a lot of this would also be helped by just a binary up or down, yes or no, on these guys instead of the 10 vote limit that they have. I hate that because then you have to get into the strategic thing of thinking, well, like, you know, you have your group of people who are like, well, I'll never vote for someone on the first ballot. But at the same time, you also get to where, like, Chipper Jones, I'm sure, lost some votes because people knew he was a shoo-in and they wanted to vote for someone to keep him on the ballot. It really shouldn't be that complicated. It's, you know, if a guy's a Hall of Famer in 2018, worth voting for him, he should be a Hall of Famer in 3 years, and he should have been a Hall of Famer 3 years ago. So, I mean, like, the whole making these guys go through this 10-year process of, you know, when they're definitely going to make it, you know, like, Edgar Martinez should probably be easily able to make it. Really, it should just be a lot easier to get these guys in. And then you don't run into the problem where you have this real struggle to keep people on a ballot who probably should have gotten more consideration, but you know, it's a numbers thing. You just can't, you know, like David Cone, Brett Saberhagen, those guys who were pretty good and top of their class when they were pitching, didn't even get a sniff. And Johan Santana dropped off the ballot this year, and he really deserves a longer look because he was extremely dominant for a short period of time and still good for a while after. I think that needs to be considered too. And, you know, it's just, there's just not enough votes. If you only get 10 to pick and you want 13 guys, well, you know, you've got to lose three. And it just doesn't seem like the best way to kind of set it up to me. And it's always irked me.
Yeah, no, I absolutely could not agree more with what you said there. I mean, and if your argument for not voting for Chipper Jones is because you say exactly like you said, where you're like, I know he's in, I don't have to worry about it. Let's give that vote. Someone got that vote, and that's what, because he was 79%. You know, he put that that in there. So, you know, maybe that 3% that Chipper Jones missed all went to Trevor Hoffman, and that's basically what put him over the edge. You know, if that's the case, then that's fine. But that asinine stance of, you know, nobody's a first ballot Hall of Famer, it's like, well, that's just completely dumb. So I've never understood that. And so right. It's kind of...
especially when they're dead set obvious guys like Griffey, Jeter.
Yeah.
Chipper.
And Chipper Jones. I mean, everyone knew he was a Hall of Famer basically when he started playing. And the fact that his career confirmed it is really all you needed. And he should have got the vote. So, yeah, if you were confident in his chances and decided to just give that vote to somebody else, then that's one thing. But if you were, you know, honestly didn't think he was good enough to be first ballot Hall of Famer, then I question your chance for voting for the Hall of Fame in the first place. So, but
which is fair.
Which is absolutely fair.
Yeah.
So... anyway, that's kind of the major baseball news, because there's literally nothing else happening right now from overall baseball. So it's been an incredibly it was boring for a period of time in the offseason, and then I would argue now that it's still boring in terms of the amount of transactions, but quite a bit more intriguing now. So I don't think anyone is trying to suggest that there's any sort of collusion happening, but there's kind of whispers of it, of like, you know, if it's not collusion, then what the hell else is going on? And it's kind of interesting. I mean, we've talked about it multiple times now already, but there's not a ton else that we can bring to the table that we
right.
said. But we can talk about some one free agent signing that the Royals actually did make.
Just it blew up the news wires. It was all over.
Just completely all over everywhere. Twitter was almost had to shut down.
I think they should have put up a billboard out by out off I-70 and all that, and just plastered the city with information about this. And just in time for Royals Fan Fest this weekend too.
Absolutely,
so I'm sure that's a sure sellout now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, we're talking about Ryan Goins, as I'm sure you've already heard.
Absolutely.
As the listeners of the show. I don't know how you couldn't have heard.
Right.
But so all tongue-in-cheek jokes aside, the Royals did in fact sign Ryan Goins to a minor league deal.
Yeah. It's a thing that happened.
It is a thing that happened. That's I don't know what else more I can say.
Dave Lesky called him a poor man's Chris Getz, which is just...
which I thought Chris Getz was a poor man's Chris Getz, so that's quite impressive.
Right. It's not the most inspiring stuff. I would say one thing, that Goins has more pop than Chris Getz.
There is that.
But he doesn't steal bases. He plays more positions.
That's something.
But yeah, I mean, you compare his numbers to like Alcides Escobar, and it's basically very similar. So, I don't know. He's going to be invited to spring training. If he makes a big league club, he'll make $1 billion. He turns 30 in about 3 weeks or so. It's a signing. He's kind of on the honorable mention of guys I figured the Royals would have gotten by now. Team, like,
I love that. It's my favorite list.
I mean, it just is, and it's like someday I gotta like look at an actual list of players and be like, "Yep, he should be." Like Peter Borges should really be a Royal.
Oh yeah, he'll be a Royal.
I'm shocked he hasn't.
Some point, yes.
It must be that collusion that's just keeping him from getting here, because I think he's still available. I don't know. Yeah, Ryan Goins, like, whatever. I mean, he can play a bunch of infield spots. He could play shortstop, I guess, if he needed to. He'll probably be in Omaha for a bit and get pulled up when somebody gets hurt. I don't know. There's not a lot to say about him.
Tell me that.
Yeah, yep. He's very underwhelming, but, you know, you kind of got to get those guys. And
bodies, he'll come in and he'll – do something at some point, and he might have a clutch hit that helps him win a game.
Yeah. In 2016, he played every position but catcher and center field.
Look at that.
I think his biggest contribution is going to be for the Royals will be, he's already done it, and that would be in 2015 in game two of the ALCS, where Ben Zobrist hit a pop-up. And he ran in front of Jose Bautista, and it fell between them, And the Royals went on to score five runs and ended up winning the game 6-3 and gave themselves a 2-0 lead. And, yeah, went from there. So if he does anything else, I don't know. He did hit nine homers last year. But, yeah.
Nine home runs last year. That's Hosmer-esque.
Yeah, honestly, I could have probably hit like four with the ball the way it is.
Yeah, the juice ball there.
Just get a hold of it on a windy day four times, and there it is. But, yeah, Ryan Goins.
Yep.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. So, with that, we have decided to kind of take a look now as we get ever and ever closer, despite the lack of free agent moves, where the time doesn't slow down, even if it seems like the offseason is going slower. We're still moving towards spring training, still moving towards pitchers and catchers reporting in just a few weeks here. So I guess the only thing to do at this point is to take a look at what we do know. So we have, thankfully, on our crack ace reporting staff at BP Kansas City, we have someone like Clint Scholes, who is able to provide a fantastic depth chart going all the way through the entire Royals system, which allows us to kind of talk about the players who are here. We've got all these unknowns left in this offseason. Well, let's talk about what we do know. So I'm going to kind of throw out this tentative, I guess you could say, roster. we'll start with the knowns, okay? What we did, the absolute 100%, we know this is where it's as of today. It's always possible some sort of trade happens, no matter who the player is. But this is what we know as of today. So your big numero uno thing that we absolutely know with complete certainty, Salvador Perez will be the starting catcher on opening day. So, again, I suppose it's possible that he's traded. But as of today, as the way the Royals roster is constructed, Salvador Perez will certainly be catcher. Alex Gordon will be in left field. Those are two of the biggest contracts on the team. Those are two of the most prominent players from recent times. They're veterans. They'll be out there. They'll be starting on opening day. Next, we'll have Whit Merrifield at second base. He had a fantastic season last year for someone who no one really talked about until 2016 and had a solid season there, some bright spots, but also some low spots, but then came back last year and was a very consistently good performer for when he got that consistent playing time. So he earned the starting spot, and we talked about last year, whether it was between him and Raul Mondesi, et cetera, et cetera. He's earned it this year, and he will get that starting spot, I don't think, unless he gets traded, and he's kind of the one of the big whispers for who on the Royals could be traded. But if he's with the team as he is today, he'll be in that spot to start the season. Raul Mondesi, despite his difficulties the last couple of years, he will, as of now, I would find it hard to believe he wouldn't be the Royals starting shortstop. Chester Cuthbert, who has played just spectacularly average in most of his time with the Royals, but will he'll be starting at third base most likely. In the outfield, between Jorge Soler, Jorge Bonifacio, Paolo Orlando, they're going to have to find some sort of configuration there. But two of those three players will likely start on your outfield. So that leaves us with, I guess I kind of went through the whole roster. I left out first base, but first base is really unknown right now. I mean, we have Brandon Moss, who could technically, as we talked about David Ortiz earlier,
he could definitely stand in the spot.
Yes, he could stand there and make sure the Royals don't have to forfeit by being on the field.
He didn't play that Moss, bad, but he's definitely going from Hosmer to that is kind of
so, I mean, I think iffy. When you look at the roster, obviously first base, I think we're probably in agreement there. That's kind of the biggest up in the air. But what are the other ones that do you think the Royals are are looking to actively fill and change from where the roster is now before before opening day?
I would probably go to I would say center field, definitely. I mean, Paulo Orlando has played well in spurts, just filling in, you know, when Alex Gordon got hurt in 2015 and at different points in 2016. You know, he played okay. I do think that he definitely has his shortcomings out there. But right now, he's the only, like, natural center fielder that I think the Royals feel comfortable putting out there. I mean, Billy Burns can play it. He's definitely got the speed, but he's not much at the plate. And I just can't imagine that he's got enough juice to unseat Paulo Orlando. But if they were able to get anybody else to start over Orlando, I think they probably would. And you know, they might have that deal cooking, but it's really difficult, it turns out, to replace Lorenzo Cain in center field.
Who would have thought?
Go figure. Orlando definitely has the speed to play it, and I think if you watch him, I think he can definitely play center better than either corner spot. It just always seems like he sees the ball better from that vantage point. But he's still, you know, he's still not really that effective, and I think that, you know, last year you look at how he started the season, he was just miserable for the first couple weeks, and they sent him down, and he was down there for basically the rest of the year. He did have some injury problems that popped up here and there, so that's maybe something else. But I think center is definitely the next kind of thing. It's kind of a shame that Bubba Starling had so many oblique problems last year that he didn't get a look in September in preparation for maybe a shot this year. And maybe he comes out in spring and just tattoos the ball and plays great defense and looks every part of the guy that we've been waiting on for years, but you cannot count on that.
Yes, maybe indeed.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not counting on it. I think he'll make it up this year at some point. But you sure can't rely on it. So I think that's their most likely position to go try to find somebody. It also is the position on the free agent market, at least, that probably has the most guys left. I mean, we've talked about those guys in the past. Gerard Dyson's still out there, and Lorenzo Cain is still out there. But I think that's the one spot they'd be most actively looking to improve right now. And then after that, it'd probably be first base, just because Moss is fine, but I think they would really rather he DH. The other problem with that is that you've got Jorge Soler, and Bonifacio came up last year and definitely showed that he belongs at this level, and Soler really struggled. And if you've got to choose one of those guys in the lineup, you probably go with Bonifacio because he's less of a liability in right field. So I think it kind of shapes out that Brandon Moss probably at first base right now unless something else happens. So, you know, what that means when they face a lefty, I think he hit better against lefties last year generally, but, you know, I mean, traditionally lefty-lefty is not a good matchup. You might see someone, you know, maybe Cuthbert plays some first base to be a righty on that side, and you play Ramon Torres at third or something. I don't know. But I think center and first base are the two toughest positions right now. Third base might be up in the air, but Cuthbert really just has to fend off Hunter Dozier, and Cuthbert has shown in 2016 that he can at least hold his own there. You know, he had a pretty good season filling in for Moustakas, so he's also out of options, so it's definitely probably his job to lose at third. The rest around the field, it's mostly guys that we've seen for a while, plus Mondesi, who is probably going to get every chance to keep that job no matter what, just because they don't have a lot of other options they would want to put over. And as we saw last year in spring training, you know, he was basically anointed halfway through, and they had to find, you know, they basically justified it 3 weeks into spring training to decide that, hey, he's just going to be the guy. And then he, you know, didn't get off to a good start, and Whit Merrifield came up and basically unseated him at second. But, you know, now there's no Alcides Escobar, so Mondesi has an open shot at that spot. So, you know, there's weaknesses all around, and there's a lot of questions, and even the established guys have questions. So what we know right now, it's a kind of rough-ish looking lineup. It's not inspiring right now.
No. No, it's not. I agree with your assessment in terms of, you know, center field being huge and then first base after that. And yeah, as you mentioned, you know, especially with Jorge Bonifacio and then Cuthbert, I say he's spectacularly average. That may be underselling him a tad bit. He's been decent, but he's both Cuthbert and Bonifacio to a larger extent have proven that they are major league caliber players. You know, whether you're they're not setting the world on fire necessarily.
We don't know if they're good yet.
They can handle it though. They're it's not like what we've seen so far from Raul Mondesi, which is he just was not ready. The stage was too big for him. Mm-hmm. It was too much. You know, the same cannot be said for Chester Cuthbert and Jorge Bonifacio. So those, you know, you can stick them somewhere, and you know, especially if what Bonifacio showed you last year is repeatable, you know, you can get decent production out of him for that. So, you know, those positions are a little bit easier to kind of squint and say, okay, well, maybe those can be okay if the right things fall. But yeah, first base, center field, I mean, and it just kind of, you know, whatever you want to say about the Royals system and how they've chosen to manage it the last few years and everything, you know, center field has been a big hole for a while, and seems like they kind of long ago just decided it was Bubba Starling's thing, and it has just never materialized for him. So now, now the Royals are just kind of, what do we do now? And who knows? We'll kind of see, I guess. But now, you know, moving on to the pitcher side of things, talk about what we know again. We'll talk about starters first. So we know as of today, again, this could change, but as of today, we know Danny Duffy will start opening day. We know Ian Kennedy will be in the rotation. We know Jason Hamill will be in the rotation. I think the rest, honestly, is kind of up for grabs. You agree with that, or you think the fourth and fifth spot are a little bit more solidified than I do?
You know, I think if you kind of look at it, I think a lot of people have Nate Karns penciled in somewhere in there, fourth spot, fifth spot, what have you. But we do need to remember that he's coming off thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. And that can be a difficult one to come back from. I mean, Luke Hochaver still hasn't returned. We'll see how, like, Matt Harvey ends up doing. Chris Young, you know, has come back from it at various times. So I don't know how he'll respond to that, and it may be something that to start the year they want him in the bullpen, you know, just to let him work up slowly. I think Jake Junis has a really good shot. He pitched so well down the stretch last year that I think he definitely opened the Royals' eyes as far as what he can do, and that gives him a good shot to kind of come out and get one of those rotation spots. But I think he still has to prove it a little bit in spring training. I don't think they've got him down in pen in there. If he comes out and he struggles, I don't think they'd hesitate to put him in Omaha to start out. They do have guys like Trevor Oakes, who we talked about 2 weeks ago, Willie Peralta, who they signed earlier, who seemed like he was going to be a minor signing and now is their biggest signing of the offseason.
Hey!
They've got like Eric Skoglund could maybe start a little bit. Sam Gavilio, who they claimed off waivers, is around there, and they might even go with like I think Birch Smith is the more starter profile type of guy that they got in the Rule 5 draft, or at least they got in a trade after the Rule 5 draft. So those are, you know, potential guys who could maybe be in the mix for those spots. Not a ton of depth. You know, you're talking about three spots that are for sure, but, you know, Kennedy was not very good last year, and Duffy was hurt a couple times last year, and, you know, Mike Minor's not around because he's signed elsewhere. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that you would probably say there's a 3/4 chance that Jake Junis is in that rotation unless he really bombs in spring training. And it's probably even higher than that. I think they really like him. And he certainly pitched well enough in the second half last year to get that spot. But if somebody else emerges, I mean, you know, I don't think Nate Karns is really a surefire number five starter, at least to start the year, maybe towards the middle of the year. But from what we've got in front of us now, I can't really say with certainty that I would say he'll start, just because that's a big surgery to come back from. And, you know, he has pitched out of the bullpen before, and that's a good way to work him back into shape if they needed to. So, but there's also not a lot of options. So not a lot of great ones. I mean, Andres Machado is out there, who's on the 40-man roster now. They signed Scott Barlow in the offseason, who maybe could emerge as somebody else. You know, there's a lot of iffy names to maybe fill that out. And that might be the best thing for Jake Junis, is he's just got to be better than some of those guys. And I, you know, I think he can definitely do it, but I don't think it's a set in stone. But yeah, it's rough. It's going to be, I mean, the Royals weren't good pitching wise last year, and you know, they haven't gotten better.
No, certainly not.
So could be ugly.
It could be ugly.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about the bullpen, which we can talk about now.
Yeah.
Where, again, as of today, I think, you know, we've got Kelvin Herrera penciled in as the closer, but as good as he's been in this most recent run for the Royals, last year was not a banner year for Kelvin Herrera. People thought, you know, you had the HDH in 2014, we had Herrera, Davis, Holland, and, you know, Greg Holland gets injured in 2015, so Wade Davis slides over into the closer role. Herrera slides over into the eighth inning role. Wade Davis gets traded, then you just assume, well, Kelvin Herrera just slides into the closer role, and it's just that easy, right? Just keep chugging along. Well, nope. that is not what happened. And who knows? Maybe it was just a bad year. Maybe he can't handle being a closer. I don't think this is what he is, but I always kind of think of Juan Cruz.
Yeah.
Who was a guy who was a really good setup guy, a good eighth inning guy. Like, oh man, he should be able to close. And he was given some opportunities when Soria would get hurt, and back when Soria was on his first run with the Royals, and it just failed miserably. He just, for whatever reason, that mental block, you know, and we like to think these guys are autonomous robots who it doesn't matter what inning or any other rest that they could just come in and perform the same no matter what, but that's not the case. And there is a mentality to being a closer, however big or slight you may think it is. Some people just don't have it. Not to say that's what Kelvin Herrera is, but the question is there after how poorly he performed last season. So who knows with that, but we know for sure he's going to be pitching in some form for the Royals, in the Royals bullpen. Again, he's a very likely candidate to be traded if the Royals are to make a trade before the season starts. But as of today, the way the roster is constructed, he will be in the bullpen. He will be a big part of it and likely be the closer. I think we know as well that Brandon Maurer will be another big piece of the bullpen. Of course, you mentioned the great Willie Peralta. And the other names are kind of there, but you mentioned Birch Smith. We've got Brad Keller, another Rule 5 guy. You know, Kevin McCarthy, Ryan Buchter. Those guys are there, but I don't think their positions are as solidified as – you know, the Kelvin Herreras and Maurers of the world, especially when, you know, you've got a guy like Josh Staumont or Eric Skoglund who have shown some flashes but haven't been able to put it all together, and maybe starting them out in the bullpen, kind of easing them into a starter role as they get a little bit more used to pitching at the major league level is a possibility, especially if they have a really good spring training and the Royals need some holes to fill. Those are guys that have pitched in the major leagues and have at least some experience, and maybe you can leverage that. Who knows? So,
yeah,
it's, you know, we've taken for granted. We've been spoiled so much at how good the bullpen has been in the past few years for the Kansas City Royals. And this year, we'll kind of see how the other half lives or has lived over the last half decade, if you will. And my guess is it will not be all that fun.
I know. I mean, they were really – bullpen was really rough last year. I mean, Herrera was a big part of that because obviously he had his issues at various points. And Soria, you know, for all the grief he took, yeah, when he, you know, when he blew a lead, oh, he blew it. You know, he blew yep. it up. You know, but you look at what the Royals did last year, some of their best performers, two of their best performers were Scott Alexander, who was traded, and Peter Moylan, who's a free agent. And I think he's talked with Cleveland. I think he's talked with Atlanta. Hasn't been a lot of movement about him coming back to Kansas City. And he pitched in about a million games last year. So you're missing a lot of innings from your bullpen last season. And, you know, that's not, you know, just not counting the fact that you're not entirely sure what you have in Herrera. Brandon Maurer is not exactly someone that you feel comfortable with. And then you have a couple of Rule 5 guys who might fall in there. So it's weird. I do think Kevin McCarthy pitched pretty well last year in a bunch of different spots. Buchter pitched pretty well after, you know, he kind of got off to a rocky start after he was traded over from San Diego. I think that there are a couple of interesting folks in Omaha that will probably come up, and maybe they're guys to kind of keep in mind. Like Eric Stout was added to the 40-man roster to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. I got to think there's a reason for that, that the Royals felt like he was probably ready for another team to take. Tim Hill's in that same spot. You've got the living legend of Richard Lovelady, who a lot of people yes. are excited to see. He'll probably
Some would refer to as Dick.
They could do that. Kevin Lenick is interesting too. He's kind of picked up a few mentions this offseason as someone to kind of keep an eye on. And then, I mean, of course, there's Kyle Zimmer and Miguel Almonte, who are kind of like the lost souls of Royals prospects past.
Kyle Zimmer, the Bubba Starling of pitchers.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't have expectations for Zimmer or Almonte, but it's entirely possible that at least, like, Almonte could maybe come up and carve out some kind of role in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So you've got some intrigue for some of those guys. I can't say that it's reliable, but the Royals, if they've done nothing else, they've shown that they can piece together a bullpen out of rags a few times.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to 2011, you know, or you say, okay, well, they've got this Greg Holland guy who was a 10th round pick with very little fanfare. You've got Kelvin Herrera, who couldn't hardly stay healthy in the minors, was a failed starter. And then fast forward to 2013, 2014, when they picked up Wade Davis in the trade with every intention of him being a starter in the Will Myers-James Shields trade. And then he gets moved to the bullpen as another failed starter. And all these things work out. It's not to say it's going to happen again, but to your point, you know, it's certainly possible and has happened before. And there's a lot of those kinds of pitchers that, you know, maybe they could, depending on how things fall, could really find a place, find a home in the bullpen. You know, for some of them, for the Royals' sake, I hope they become long-term starters. When you talk about Jake Junis, guys like Josh Staumont, and Eric Skoglund, et cetera. So, you know, I'd much prefer those guys to be quality starters, but if they end up just being very good relievers, possibly dominant relievers in some cases, you're going to take that as well. So, yeah, it will be kind of interesting to see if maybe they can recreate that kind of lightning strike, if you will. And, you know, it's almost the Astros last year didn't quite have, but, you know, the Cubs – you know, they had good starting pitching, but they also kind of the Cubs and Cleveland in 2016. I don't want to say they took the Royals' model, but they definitely took some influences from the Royals' success in terms of building such a very good, very dominant bullpen. When you talk about having Andrew Miller and Rollins Chapman, and just kind of going from there and been building around just really strong back end of the bullpen. So not to say that the Royals kind of invented this trend, but teams definitely took notice. Yeah, I mean, you have to after a team wins a World Series. So, so who knows if the Royals will be able to recreate that? You know, my inclination is to say no, but it's at least something that the Royals have a track record now where you say, okay, it's certainly possible. Now, I don't know if Dave Island being gone, if that how that's going to impact things, but you know, we'll see. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how that develops for this season, because I don't anticipate the Royals being all that competitive. So they're going to have some room to kind of play around and experiment, I think, which could be fun in its own right.
Yeah, I kind of remember back in like 2008, 2007, 2008, you know, early in the Dayton Moore era, where they would just kind of pick guys up and turn them into, oh, okay, all of a sudden this guy's a functional reliever. Like, oh, that's interesting. And that kind of carried over as they went along, where they always could kind of find guys who could bring it, throw hard, and had a good secondary pitch, and they could at least use them out of the bullpen and just see what you had in some of those guys. I'm thinking of like Ramon Ramirez and Leo Nunez, who later became Juan Carlos Oviedo. And you know, then it that developed into, yeah, like the, you know, the failed starters of Wade Davis and Luke Hochaver and the guys who were kind of overlooked in Holland and Herrera and stuff like that. So, I mean, they've got a shot. I mean, they have at least guys with some sliver of upside, and there should be plenty of opportunities in 2018 to kind of see what these guys can do. I don't think – I mean, Dayton Moore is going to say that they want to be competitive. And
of course,
that's
you have
fine.
To.
You have to say that. You're not going to come out and say, oh, we're going to tank. Because, one, you never know. I mean, maybe they win 10 out of their first 12 games and something happens. And who knows? I mean, I can't imagine that's going to happen. But, you know, that can set them up to maybe have an interesting season. But at the same time, if you expect the Royals to be fourth or fifth in the division – they're going to have opportunity for guys to pitch in games that, while, yeah, it sucks to say they're meaningless, at least it gives them some experience, and maybe that experience pays off in 2 or 3 years when the Royals are ready to kind of be good again. It's you know, they've got a lot of options. They've got a lot of guys that they can kind of move up and down. They have guys that they're not, like, really tied to heavily. Among that young group of potential relievers. And so I think you're going to see a lot of movement between, you know, the AAA and the big leagues to try to find the right mix, and you just see who emerges. It's going to be interesting is a word for it. It might be really frustrating, but along the way you might see flashes of this guy or that guy figuring it out, bouncing back, you know, anything like that. So it's, I don't know. I mean, there's certainly more
what
names.
What year was, I was like, what year was Greg Holland when he had the best Royal year ever? They made the t-shirt the next year, or the best year for a Royal reliever ever. Was that 2012 or 2013? I couldn't remember.
I feel like it was 2013.
You know what I'm talking about, though? 2013. That's what I was thinking, but
like the one where they all put the get it to that guy shirts.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and
exactly.
Then he had a shirt that said that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had, then 13. The next year, and the next year they had like the t-shirt Tuesday. I still have it. I still wear it. Where it's got like had all his stats, which were obscene, from the year. But anyway, just that was, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that was just to kind of further your point of not being competitive, but still seeing something exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, you think back to like 2011, they were able to throw, you know, Holland was in there, and Aaron Crow made the big league club, and Tim Collins came up. And
thank you. Until now, I had forgotten about Aaron Crow.
He had a couple of good years.
He did.
They had just, you know, that handful of guys who were all rookies or second-year players and just got a chance to do some on-the-job training and kind of figure it out, and some places it worked and some guys were inconsistent but good in spots. And I think that's what you'll see this year out of this group. you know, the kind of the wild card in all of this is that you've got two Rule 5 guys. So, you know, maybe you get two knowing you only really intend to keep one by the end of it. But both those guys could bring it out of the bullpen. I think either would be an option. And, you know, someone like Brad Keller was highly regarded as a Rule 5 pick. So it's those are guys to kind of keep in mind. I mean, they're probably going to be guys you didn't know of a year ago, and this year you might hear them 50 or 60 times and maybe even, you know, grow to appreciate them. Or you might, you know, curse at them on Twitter. I don't. It's highly possible too, and probably likely in some spots. So yes. I don't know. From where we are right now, bullpen's probably the one spot they won't mess with that much, if I had to say, just because they have so many guys they can throw there, and it might just be a matter of like ninja style attacking just one at a time, new guy, new guy, new guy, and you just see if anybody can actually hold up. And maybe they will, maybe they won't, but if they don't, they got the next guy, and you just keep trying. And, you know, maybe the Royals lose 95 games, but by the end of it, you might find two or three guys who can be good bullpen pieces. Hopefully.
Crazier things have happened.
I mean, that's kind of the thing for this season. It's like, I don't know. They might blow it all up and go out and sign Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain tomorrow and bring back Moylan and find a reliever and find another starter out of nowhere. And everything we've spent the last hour talking about is moot, but likelihood of that's pretty slim. So for right now, I would say yes, pretty slim. Yeah, I think bullpen's probably the one spot they're not going to tinker with much as far as like – signing anybody, unless it's maybe a guy who could be a long reliever and maybe a starter, you know, in that swingman kind of spot, just because they could use the length out of the bullpen, especially if Nate Karns isn't quite there. So that might be the one thing they do, but I really think it's going to be like starting pitcher and center fielder, like their two targets outside of, you know, somehow trying to sign Eric Hosmer, who is taking a long time to accept one of 2 7-year offers.
Right.
Huh. I wonder.
Weird.
I wonder if maybe that was a little excited in the.
A little presumptuous.
In the reporting there. Because at this stage, like, if you don't take that, you're really dumb.
Yes. Very.
But what do I know?
I'm not much a big league dumb. So. Yeah. I'm not a Major League Baseball player, so I don't know.
I have no idea. Seems like when guys are signing for 2 years and $6 million, you probably want to take 7 for $140.
That's just, you know, if it were me. Yeah. But it obviously most decidedly is not me.
Prioritize as you need.
Yes. But I think that's kind of all we have. Did you have anything else that you wanted to cover?
Pretty much. I just kind of jotted down some other names, and these are guys more like on the offensive side that we didn't really mention, but maybe guys that you might see later. I think it's definitely a lot more stable on the fielding side of things as far as like, okay, we kind of, if it's not Cuthbert, it's probably Hunter Dozier at third. You're pretty certain that Ramon Torres will be your backup infielder. Drew Butera is going to be the backup catcher. But even then, if it's not Butera, the surprise isn't really Cam Gallagher because he played pretty well last year when he came up briefly. So, but some other names, first base, maybe Ryan O'Hearn, maybe Frank Schwindel could do something there. Maybe if Dozier has a good spring, they feel comfortable putting him at first base. Tyler Collins was a minor league signee last week, who famously flipped off the Detroit Tigers fan base from center field while a member of the Detroit Tigers. So good idea there. He's, you know, nothing exciting, but he could be someone they bring up just to have another player who can play center, because otherwise it's Alex Gordon. And while he can play center, you probably don't want him to play center. Nicky Lopez is kind of floating out there, but I think the Royals really want to see him play every day and stay in the minors for a bit. You know, Cody Asche was signed as a minor league free agent. He had some success here and there with the Phillies. He could play in the corner infield spots. Maybe Donnie DeWeese is out there, who the Royals got 13 months ago. I forgot who they traded for him. It's going to bug me. We'll remember it next week.
Yes,
we won't remember it next week.
In our weekly corrections section from the week before.
Right. Yeah. If we did a corrections segment, that would be half the show.
We wouldn't have our own show each week.
It would just be the corrections.
Constant corrections.
We're very sorry.
Yes.
So he might be maybe someone you see, but it's very slim on him. And a lot of those guys aren't on the 40-man roster yet either, so that's going to make it more difficult to bring them on simply because, you know, anytime you have a 40-man move, the guys who are already on the 40-man are probably usually going to get that choice first unless somebody's really playing their way onto it. So, but those are just a few other names that kind of – to have in mind that you may or may not hear about later. And other guys could emerge, but those are kind of the guys penciled in right now as guys who are probably going to get most of the playing time at AAA and maybe AA, who might have a shot at some point this year playing at the big league level. So good to keep them in mind, at least just to, have them on the radar.
Absolutely. So with that, I think we'll wind it down for the week. Again, unfortunately, I wish we had more fun free agent stuff to talk about, but I imagine every team-based independent podcast is having the same issues that we are, for nowhere in baseball is anybody really making any moves. I mean, it's all the national writers and everything, everyone's been talking about how incredibly weird of an offseason it is, how little moves have been made, even the big names, et cetera, et cetera. So, if we had the power to change things, we would, but unfortunately we don't. So hopefully, we'll keep saying this until it happens. There'll be some more to talk about next week and we'll see, but regardless, we will, we'll be back next week to talk about whatever happens or does not happen.
Right.
And we'll kind of go from there. So once again, thank you all so much for listening. We love you all as our listeners. Couldn't do it without you. Thanks again, as always, to our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn. If you're looking for a good time, you happen to be in Westport. It's supposed to be nice and warm this weekend. So if you want to get out, stretch the legs a little bit, maybe go eat on a nice patio. Kelly's is an excellent rooftop deck. They got heaters up there too, so if it does happen to get cold, they'll fire those up and you'll still stay nice and toasty up on that roof. We may or may not have had a live podcast or two up there in our day. So it's a good place. It's always fun up there. And if you don't feel the need to get out and you want to stay in, then there's always fantastic content every day on bpkansascity.com. Our tireless working staff, writing staff, is working all off season to make sure that you are never want of Royals content, just as we are here on this podcast. As I say that, as we missed last week, but these things happen.
Real life.
Real life indeed.
Just gets in the way.
It always seems to. But we'll be back next week, and hopefully, like I said, we'll have some actual fun baseball things to talk about, whatever that may or may not be. So we'll see. But again, thank you all so much. We'll see you next week. Until that time, thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.